We have already seen how the liturgical movement, of which, to a very great extent, Prosper Granger was the author, or at least one of the moving forces, influenced the whole of the Roman Catholic Church and enabled what had been a primarily devotionally focused notion of spirituality eventually to broaden out, to encompass the liturgy. The rather indolent and inwardly facing spirit of the late 18th and early 19th century was able to open out and give way again to that insight, or to those insights which we've already seen coming from the earliest centuries of the Church, where it was well known that the liturgy was the place where the people of God would be nourished and sustained. We've seen this in the early monastic centuries, and then in the development of the beautiful catechetical homilies of the late 4th and early 5th centuries, and especially in the writings of the mystic Dionysius the Areopagite. That represented a very powerful early influence that persisted through the Middle Ages, but as we've seen by Dom Granger's day, by the time of the French Revolution, a very different spirit had taken its place. And Granger helped influence and initiate a very important reform. In this document by Dame Janswith Edwards, one has a beautiful testimony to the effect of Granger's work and thought not only on the broader life of the Church, but on the interior renewal of monasticism itself, not within the Solemn Congregation, not within the houses directly founded by Granger, but on others which had their own venerable but very difficult history. Among Benedictines, the English congregation's history is unique in that they were not destroyed by the French Revolution, but instead the Revolution allowed them to return back to England, from which they had been living in exile since the time of basically of Queen Elizabeth, and certainly during the decades that followed her reign. The English congregation, as it became in exile, both of monks and of nuns, was permitted to return to England in the wake of the French Revolution, partly because of England's loathing for everything that the revolutionaries were doing. There was a willingness on the part of the Protestant aristocracy of England to permit even Catholics to come back legally into the country and to practice their religion, even religious, because this in many ways was such a slap in the face of the French. So the English congregation profited from this toleration that began in the early 19th century. But an ability to return does not necessarily mean that you will prosper. And the monastery of Stanbrook, which had been existing on the continent in Cambrai, was in rather desperate straits at various points in its history. And Dame Answith mentions the importance of Granger's work and ideas both on her own community and in the English Benedictine congregation in general. And here too, it's important for us to bear in mind that the emphasis we find today among those who follow the rule of Saint Benedict, Benedictines, Cistercians, Camaldolese, among all of those who look to Saint Benedict as their founder, on the liturgy, the emphasis on prayer together as being the central point of life, was not as obvious to those who follow the rule of Saint Benedict in the 1800s. The English Benedictine congregation of men had been very involved in the work of evangelism and in setting up parishes. And for them, what they called the English mission was all important, being able to help Catholicism to find its place, to recover its place in English society and in English religious society was one of their primary goals. And the idea that you would focus on liturgical prayer together in the cloister was not as clearly a central focus or goal for them in the 19th century. And this influenced the women's communities as well. If you drop down to the description not just of the foundation or the development of the community as it existed during the time of its transfer and expulsion from Flanders in the late 18th century, she describes the fact that when, and the article is primarily about Father Lawrence Shepherd's work in implanting and in making available to her community the insights of Dom Guéranger. She mentions the fact that when he first visited there, he was told not only that there were those who were willing to simply let the monastery, let the community of Stanbrook die out, but there were those who pointed out that the community, although it in some ways was of some interest, it was not really what one could regard as a particularly observant monastic house. It was in many ways a very nice place, a very good community of women living together, but as far as it being a monastery in any significant sense of the word, that was a different matter. And it was primarily the renewal of life, the renewal of an understanding of what monastic life could mean, the possibility of a primary focus on prayer, the discovery of the possibility of the liturgical year being a source of contemplative prayer, which is very much at the heart of Dom Guéranger's work, which provided the possibility of and the experience of a restoration within her own community. And I'll leave you to read this story on your own. It doesn't require any commentary of mine. But bear in mind again that what it bears witness to is the fact that this liturgical movement, this recovery and rediscovery of monastic possibilities, was something that was not only benefiting the church at large, but was helping monks and nuns recover their own roots, was helping them discover again what they were for, not only just for the work they did, whether it was educational work or parish work or farm work, but primarily being women and men of prayer, and within that context, discovering that they could be a very great benefit to the whole church. This, in many ways, is what is attested in this description of a particular community's reception of and development under the influence of Guéranger's work, which was transmitted to them by their own chaplain.